Hello everybody and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe, Lisa and Betty Ann.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe. We have a really cool show for you tonight. We've got some great guests, so stay tuned for the next hour. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun. We're airing live from the Artist First World Network. Hi, Betty Ann.
Hi, Lisa.
Dee left us tonight. Dee's a busy girl, busy businesswoman.
Yes. But she'll be back with us next week.
Yep. So we're just flying solo tonight. We have some great guests coming up, some very, very interesting people. So I think we'll have a really fun hour.
Yeah, we will. We're a little tired, though, because we've been practicing. Right, Lisa?
We're practicing. That's right. We're going to be Philadelphia Alumni Eagles cheerleaders. We'll be performing at a charity softball game in July.
Yeah.
Five decades of cheerleaders.
And so we are learning the shuffle.
Yeah, we're going to be dancing to Party Rock.
I had to talk about that because the song is playing in my head constantly now, and I can't get it out.
Well, I think we're doing pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I know. Once you get it down.
Yeah, I think we're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Once you get the shuffle down, you just do it. You just
Every
do
day
it.
I'm shuffling. I can't sing. Well, anyway, let's go to our first guest, though. This is a really cool guy. His name's Tony Piazza. He is a Central Coast of California mystery writer. He's a film historian, a presenter, and a veteran storyteller, well known for his passion about writing and movies. Welcome, Tony.
Oh, thank you so much. It's nice talking to you.
Oh, our pleasure. So tell us what you do. You got like a cool career going over here.
Yes, I do. As you mentioned, I am a mystery writer. I have two books out right now, which is the latest is The Curse of the Crimson Dragon, which is a spy mystery that's set in Hawaii in 1944. And then I also have another book called Anything Short of Murder, which is a Raymond Chandler type story written explosively in the 1930s in Hollywood, California.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just recently, I published some memoirs having to do with my time when I was with the motion picture companies, and it's called Bullet Points, B-U-L-L-I-T-T, like the movie Points, mm-hmm. which is a story about meeting Steve McQueen back in 1963 and watching him filming the motion picture Bullet. And that's available on an e-book. And all the proceeds from that will be going to Steve McQueen's favorite charity, which is the California Boys Republic in Chino Hills, California. So, and in fact, I was just there this last weekend. They had a car show there. It was called the Friends of the Steve McQueen Car Show. And I got to meet with Steve McQueen's son, Chad. And we got to visit a little bit, and I presented him with a video that I had taken back. Well, it was an 8mm movie that I had taken back in 1968 and turned it into a DVD, which I presented to him at the show.
Wow, isn't that cool?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Definitely.
You're a film historian. What does a film historian do?
Well, aside from the fact that, you know, I'm a big film fan, I got my start on the Turner Classic Movie site, where I had blogged a lot about the classic films, and also my association with them, because, as I started to mention earlier, my father started with them in 1960. He was a police officer in San Francisco, and he was assigned to all the motion picture companies that came into the city. And as a family, we were able to go down and visit the sets. And so we met people like, as I mentioned, Steve McQueen, also Clint Eastwood, and Lucille Ball, There was just a whole list of different actors that we met. Well, then about 1970, I became involved in films. I was with a casting agency in San Francisco that got me into either becoming an extra. I did bit parts. I was a stand-in. I did 5 years on the streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden and Michael Douglas. I did stand-in work on that. So I was involved in films for quite a while, up until about 1977, and then I went back to school and became a biologist, of all things. So a total change in career.
Wow, that's cool. What is your very favorite movie that you've ever seen?
Oh, gosh. Well, you talk about classic films, or I mean real classic films, or something a little bit more modern?
Probably more modern.
More modern.
That most people can relate to.
Oh, God. Well, my most modern would be films like Goldfinger in 1964 with Sean Connery. though I did like Lord of the Rings recently, which I thought was very good, very well done. Oh, gosh, what was another one? Well, another one Peter Jackson did, which I thought was a great remake. In fact, it was better than the original, was the King Kong that he made as well, too. For some reason, I seem to be centered more in the 1960s because I did a lot of film going back in those days in the theaters, and I thought there were a lot of great classic films that came out then. And so when I think of classic films, I think of then, and of course, even going back further, the 1940s films like The Thin Man with Myrna Loy and William Powell, The Maltese Falcon, of course, with Bogart. So those were all my favorite genres, I think. Detective films, spy films, some science fiction.
Now, I have a friend that lives in London, and she's loved old movies like the 30s and the 40s. I mean, do you have a book on older movies?
You mean as far as my writing is concerned?
Yeah. Do you plan on doing any writing for that?
Well, most of the stuff as a historian that I'm doing is where I've actually was involved in films. That's the way that it's set up. So where I was down on the set and I worked on films like The Towering Inferno, which had
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
I remember that movie.
Yeah, and Paul Newman was there. Fred Astaire was there. I got to meet Fred Astaire. They had, and of course Steve McQueen as well, too. I worked with Mel Brooks in High Anxiety. I did the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers that was with Donald Sutherland. So there were a lot of films during that period of time that I am relating my own personal experiences as a historian, and that's where a lot of the stories are coming out. Right now I have a blog site that I have about 60-some-odd stories up talking about all those experiences going, like I say, back to the 60s, because the first movie set that I was ever on was Experiment in Terror with Glenn Ford and Lee Remick, which was a Blake Edwards production that was filmed in San Francisco. So I think I was like 4 years old or something when that was filmed, and I was an extra sitting out in the grandstand at a Giants game. Supposedly the Giants weren't there at the time, but they were simulating a night game at Candlestick Park. So going back to there, and Ironsides was another one with Raymond Burr, a show that I'd worked with. So I have so many of these memories that I am putting those forward as stories. So as a traditional historian, let's say like Leonard Maltin, I'm not reaching for that so much as reaching for my own personal experiences and what I've done. And a lot of those are being written up at what is authortonypiazza.com. It's all one word. And if you go on that site, then you'll find a lot of those stories there.
Tony, hi, this is Betty Ann.
Hi, Betty Ann.
It's really nice to talk to you. You're really interesting, and I'm loving hearing about all these old movies. You have been an extra in many movies. What is it like to be an extra?
There's a lot of waiting around. They used to say, hurry up and wait. There always seemed like there was a big rush to get where we were supposed to go, and then you sat there and you waited for long hours. And it wasn't very comfortable at times because sometimes you're out in the freezing cold, especially in San Francisco, at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, waiting for them to do whatever shot that they needed to do. So it was a lot of waiting around, and I can't say that it was boring because there was always something going around to watch, but it was still time-consuming, and it took a very long time. when I was a stand-in, it was a little bit different, because as a stand-in, you're constantly working even in between the shots, because you're watching the actors do their rehearsals, and then once they leave, you move in and work with the camera crew and setting up all the lights and the angles, so you're constantly working all the time. So that kept you busy. And then
I see that you've worked with, well, you've worked with many, many of the famous, great actors.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your absolute favorite?
Carl Malden was my absolute favorite. That's correct. He was very much a father figure. Again, I worked with him for 5 years, and we were working 6 days a week, a minimum of 12 hours a day. So you couldn't help but be a family. But he was just very much concerned about even the little man that was on the crew. He was constantly watching out for everyone. And in that regard, he was just a very, very nice man. I'd also say Steve McQueen as well, too. Steve McQueen was just a very interesting fella. He would listen to what you had to say. He had a really intense, keen focus on what it is, and he really seemed interested, and in doing so, he made you feel real important. So I really appreciated that, because a lot of times actors may come up, they'll shake your hand, say a few polite words, and run, where Steve McQueen was really interested in what you do. So he was another nice man that I've worked with as well, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I noticed that you worked with Leslie Nielsen. Did you happen to do any of those comedy movies?
No, I did not. He was a guest star on The Streets of San Francisco, and also a TV movie that we did for Quinn Martin. Real nice man and very funny. I mean, early on in his career, he did a lot of serious roles, and no one really knew that he had all this comedy in him until the film Airplane came out, and people realized just how funny he was. And we had a lot of fun working with him. I really liked him a lot as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And how about Michael Douglas?
Michael was nice. I don't know what he's like today, but back then he was just getting his start, and he was just like one of the other guys in the group, very personable. I remember talking to him once. I had seen a photograph of him when he was 10 years old and his dad on the set of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea out in the South Pacific, and I remember that he was relating his story once I brought that up. He was very friendly and very talkative and just very, very down to earth, very nice.
Oh, that's really, you know, it's so interesting to hear these recollections that you have of these different actors, because, you know, the general public, they have one perception, or only what they read, and to get like a personal recollection from someone who actually interacted with them is really nice.
Right, and that's I was going to say, that's my point, and when I'm relating the stories, it is the difference that I'm coming from a personal perspective and not writing, you know, from the second or third, whatever perspective as others writers may do when they're talking about the stars.
Well, Tony, can you tell the listeners again where they can go to so that they can find information about your books?
Sure. It would be at author, as a, you know, book author, Tony. Mm-hmm. Piazza, PIAZZA.com, and that's all one word, of course. And that is sort of a catch-all. It has all my books. It has the blogs. It has all the events that I've been at, photographs, everything.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really enjoyed speaking with you and hearing all about your history as in the movie world. It was very nice. Thank you so much, and we'd love to have you back again sometime.
Well, thank you so very much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Join us again. We'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be back with Tony Hoover from Redline Tours in Hollywood.
And now back to Chit Chat Cafe on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Our next guest, his name is Tony Hoover, and he runs a tour company called Redline Tours. And he's going to tell us all about it. So welcome, Tony.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good.
Tell us about, you sound like you got a really cool business going. Tell us about it.
Well, we have a company in Los Angeles called Redline Tours, and what's unique about what we do is, well, a couple things are unique. We're the only full-time walking tour company in the city that offers a walking tour kind of experience. And the other thing that makes us unique is we're the only company in Los Angeles that focuses solely on the history of the city. And so we've been around for nearly 15 years now, and we're very proud of the fact that we were kind of pioneers in that area in Los Angeles. I mean, a lot of cities have those kind of experiences, but mm-hmm. those kind of experiences are rare in Los Angeles.
And what else, like, what do you take them to see?
Like, well, our main tour that we offer is called Hollywood Behind the Scenes. That's the tour that we offer to the general public.
Right.
And that is a 75-minute tour on the 100-year history of Hollywood. Our box office for that tour is located at the Egyptian Theater, which is one of the oldest theaters in Hollywood on Hollywood Boulevard, built in 1922. If you saw the movie Hugo, it was actually referenced in that film. That's the theater where the silent film Robin Hood premiered, one of the earliest movies to premiere in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for that particular movie, Robin Hood, 1922, Mr. Grauman, who built the Egyptian Theater, invented the movie premiere. And we kind of go into those kind of histories on our tour, you know, because there are spots along the way like that where a lot of major Hollywood history was born.
Wow! So you really do you do mostly classic things then. You don't do your typical go to the stars' houses and that kind of stuff.
No, you know, there's plenty of people who do that here.
No, you're very unique and very, very interesting.
Yeah, and we didn't want to focus on that because, you know, when people come to a city, you know, one of the things that we were lacking here in Los Angeles is people weren't really seeing the city per se.
Right.
They were learning about an aspect of this city, you know, like movie stars and things like that, but this is it's the second largest city in America, mm-hmm. and there's an enormous history here that goes back, you know, to the late 1700s, like any major city. And
wow.
We wanted to focus on the things that, you know, make this city a really great city. And so that's why we decided to focus on Hollywood Behind the Scenes as our Hollywood product, because, you know, without someone, you know, telling those stories, eventually those stories will get lost. For one thing. And the other thing is, you know, I think our tour, more than any other tour in the city, really helps people to appreciate that city. I think one of the great things about our tour is, you know, when people leave, we get a lot of, actually, if you go to TripAdvisor and some of the other review areas around the internet, you'll see that the post-review of our tour is extremely high. And that's because I think people really don't expect to hear or know that we have these kind of histories, these extraordinary histories here.
Mm. Wow. Now, it's strictly walking tours? Do you have any, like, on a bus or a...
We don't offer bus tours for just the general public. We do step-on service, which means, you know, when someone has their own bus, or we sometimes will provide a bus for someone for a private group, we will do some bus tours for them to give people, groups a broader experience. But for the general public on a daily basis, we don't do bus tours. Again, there's just too many people, companies in LA that are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not our particular...
That sounds like you're very unique, which is good.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that we're doing that's also very unique is we introduced this year a new commemorative ticket program that really kind of supports the storytelling idea that's a part of our experience. This year we have a three-part ticket that's about the story of the icons of Hollywood, which are the Chinese Theater, the Hollywood Bowl, and the Capitol Records Building, three of the major icons of Hollywood.
Hmm.
And on the back of those tickets, those are, you know, large format tickets. On the front, there's artwork that was produced by a local artist by the name of Andrei Mirapolsky, a very well-known artist, goes back to the 1970s, very well-known with his work with Elton John and some other famous rock bands. And we hired him to do the artwork for our tickets. And we're going to be doing that kind of process every single year. In fact, next year we're going to be working with the DGA on producing a series of four tickets honoring the history of the great directors of Hollywood and telling that story through the tickets. Hmm. And each year those tickets will retire, making them collectible. And and you know, of course, every year we'll have something new like that.
Tony, this is Betty Ann. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I would like to find out about your famous live audio system. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, I travel around the world, and I do experiences like ours in other cities. And the one thing that I found that was really kind of troublesome was, within a walking tour experience especially, you have a lot of ambient noise. You're not inside of a bus where you can control the sound and the climate. You're out in the open with everyone else, so you have, you know, city noise around you that really makes it difficult sometimes to hear the guide. In addition to that, in order to the guide to give their commentary, you have to stop and walk and stop and walk because the guide has to turn around and address the group. We pioneered a new system in America called Live Audio, and we work with William Sound out of Minnesota on the technology. And what happens is everyone in the group wears a headset and a receiver, and the guide wears a transmitter. So as the group is walking around, you still hear the ambient noise around you, but you clearly hear what the guide is saying along the way as well. Over the city noise. And in addition to that, because we use that audio system, the tour can move along very fluidly as a narrative. So the guide can be telling you a story from beginning to end without interruption, because you don't have to stop and turn around and talk to the group. You can continue walking, and they can hear you as you're moving.
I like that idea. I think it's really unique. And I can imagine walking on the tour, and then you can hear everything, but you're not having to pay, like, you can look at it at the same time without having to keep looking at the guide. You know, that's really a fabulous idea.
Yeah, it allows you to be a little bit independent, yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us some of the popular stories that you tell the people when they're on the tour?
Well, we tell a lot of stories, and we some of the more popular ones, we talk about the Egyptian and the Chinese theaters, two of the, of course, famous landmarks in Hollywood, and Mr. Grauman, Sid Grauman, who, of course, created the hand and footprints in front of the Chinese theater as a way to publicize, you know, that particular theater, create a publicity machine around the theater. But I think, you know, some of the best stories are kind of some of the basic ones, you know, like, for example, the Egyptian theater, again, is where Sid Grauman invented the Hollywood movie premiere and also used the theme of a palace to draw in wealthy and middle-income audiences. You have to remember, back in the 1920s, movies were actually made for the working poor because they couldn't afford to go to live shows. It was too expensive. And movies became a vehicle where you can provide cheap entertainment for a larger audience. And the wealthy people couldn't afford them. Or the wealthy people wouldn't afford to go, because they would rather go to, you know, live shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In order for Grauman to get the wealthy people into the theaters, he built them to look like palaces, Chinese palaces, Egyptian palaces, Spanish palaces, French palaces.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind that concept was wealthy people thought of palaces as home. So that would draw them into the theaters. And he also created the concept of the red carpet ceremony at the Egyptian theater, because, of course, what do royalty walk on from a palace to the gate to meet their press, their public? They walk on a red carpet. And the idea was, by making movie actors look like royalty, people will start to look at them as important figures in American culture, which, of course, now we see our actors as royalty in their own right. And that all kind of goes back to Mr. Grauman and his concept of the movie premiere and the red carpet ceremonies.
Wow.
Well,
Tony,
this has been a pleasure. Cool. Can you tell our listeners where they can get in touch with you if they're in the Los Angeles area?
Yeah, probably the best way to reach us is through our website, which is redlinetours.com. And on our website, our website's being retooled right now, so we have it up and running, and you can get all the great information there now. But very soon, we're going to be doing some really incredible things with the website, with the new launch coming up soon. For example, the tickets for the directors for next year, we're going to have a game on the website where when people buy a tour, on the face of the ticket, for example, the Alfred Hitchcock ticket, we're going to have little images of different movies that come from Hitchcock, and you're going to have to guess which movies are included in the ticket. And you go to our website, and you type in the answers for all of the four tickets, and if you get the winning ticket, if you get all the answers right, we're going to offer a major prize for that person. We haven't developed the prize yet, but that will be coming at the end of this year. But those are the kind of things we're going to be doing with our website, really kind of fun things like that.
Terrific, terrific. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be in
Thank you.
And your site will be up on our site so the people can find you.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You have a good weekend.
You too.
Good luck with your business.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Night, Tony.
Bye. That was cool. I would like to do that if we ever go to California.
Yeah, really. I mean, really.
Interesting.
And
it's
a walking tour.
Go to the graveyards and see the stars' houses kind of tours, you know?
Yeah, it's more behind the scenes. You go into places where people don't usually get to go.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that, those things that he was talking about tonight.
No. We learned a lot of history tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's a regular history lesson.
David, is that you that just called in? David?
That's me, ladies.
Hey, welcome.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just great. Shooing the cats out of the room so we can have a meow-free conversation.
Oh.
How many cats do you have?
Just two.
Okay.
I am outnumbered in that respect.
So we're waiting for Margaret to call in, so why don't you give us a little Hollywood stuff while we're waiting?
Oh, well, there's so much going on right now. I mean, I'll prepare to cut it off at any time if Madam Margaret joins us, but or when she joins us. But, the obvious thing to talk about as we head into a weekend is the big movies that are opening this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two wide releases this time. One is probably the first real wide release family film in quite a while, so it's going to do very, very well. And that's the latest Madagascar sequel. It's called Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. If you've seen either of the first two, you've got this quartet of New York zoo animals who early in the first film decided ill-advisedly to break out of being star attractions at the zoo and wound up in, naturally, Madagascar. And they've been trying to get back home ever since. This one finds them trying to blend in Europe in, of all things, a traveling circus, which, of course, everyone comes to see and stare at. So that might not be the best choice for traveling incognito. But the kids won't care. The kids will love the jokes and the animation. The adults will enjoy trying to spot the voiceover. You've got Ben Stiller and Chris Rock and Jada Pinkett Smith and David Schwimmer with the main voices. And if you listen carefully in there, you've got Sacha Baron Cohen, you've got Jessica Chastain, Andy Richter, Cedric the Entertainer. Who all is in it? Martin Short is hysterical. Frances McDormand, Bryan Cranston. I mean, they get huge, huge stars and plenty of them for these movies. And that's because they're a lot easier than a regular acting gig. You can go in, dressed any way you like, no makeup, no hair. You're in the recording studio for a while, and then you're done. So the actors love it, and the fans love it. So that's one of the films opening this weekend. The other one is Prometheus, and this is one that has had science fiction buffs salivating for quite a while. This is from Ridley Scott, the director who has made only two science fiction films previously, and they were both landmarks. They were Alien and Blade Runner. And so this is something that's been very highly anticipated. It's getting pretty good reviews. It's probably not going to be remembered in the same breath with the same reverence as those two, but in fact it's kind of a prequel too alien. It's set in sort of the same cinematic universe. And it also has a tremendous cast, led by someone who American audiences are going to be seeing a lot more of. Her name is Noomi Rapace, and she is best known here for being the original girl with the dragon tattoo. She played the role in the original Swedish trilogy that that was then made into American movies. And she's in this. Michael Fassbender, who's been getting great acclaim, is in this. And, hey, do I detect the presence of Margaret Cho?
Almost. I'm getting her on the line for you in just a second.
Fantastic. All right. Anyway, Prometheus also has Michael Fassbender, Charlize Theron, Idris Elba, Guy Pearce, and other star-studded cast. And, again, while maybe not up to the level of Alien or Blade Runner, it's getting good reviews and should do pretty good business.
David, have you seen Snow White and the Huntsman?
I haven't yet. People who have tell me, well, actually, they've had a variety of reactions. They've said mostly that the look of it is great, the sets and the costumes, that Charlize Theron is an ice queen like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little uneven about some of the rest of the film, but it's done tremendously well at the box office. Yeah, there's also
Hello?
A controversy brewing on that, but we'll talk
Hello?
To Margaret first, I guess.
Hello,
hi, Margaret.
Is this Margaret? Hi, yes. Hi, Margaret. I'm Betty Ann.
Hi, Betty.
And Lisa is on the line, and
Hi.
So is David.
Hi.
Hi there. I've been tweeting at you the last few hours to make sure that you knew you were going to be ambushed by an actual Hollywood journalist on this.
Okay. Well, here I am. Thank you.
You have such a cute voice. You sound so cute.
Oh. Well, thank you. So do you.
Margaret, we are so excited to talk to you. This is such a thrill tonight. I'd like to introduce you. Our guest tonight is Margaret Cho. She's a comedian, fashion designer, actress, author, and singer-songwriter. She's currently co-starring in the Lifetime series Drop Dead Diva. Welcome to the fabulous Margaret Cho.
Thank you so much. Thank you. What an honor.
We're so excited. Of course, you know we're cheerleaders, former NFL cheerleaders, so I'm going to start it off this way. Do you have any jokes about cheerleaders?
Well, I don't, not necessarily, just because I've always wanted to be one. And I did, in the 90s, briefly wear, like, a cheerleader outfit that was non, I guess, I don't know, denominational. Like, there was no team associated with the outfit, but NFC was making a bunch of cheerleader outfits, so I love it. I think they're gorgeous and so sexy.
Oh, okay. Well, you can be a cheerleader with us. Well, you can join our group because we're former. So,
I love it.
Next time you're in the Philadelphia area, you can come dance with us. Right now we're learning how to do the party rocker shuffle because we're going to be performing.
That's great. I love it. Well, I want to do it. I want to be in a pyramid, and I want to be on the bottom.
Okay.
That's so hot.
So tell us all about what's happening with you. I've seen you everywhere. You've been on every TV show talking about Drop Dead Diva. Tell us everything you're doing.
Well, we're just starting season four. Our premiere was Sunday, and it was super exciting. We are, like, amazed, like, and, like, we're loving it that we're, like, in our fourth year. That's a huge, big deal. I mean, I've never been on a show that's been on for that long, so it's so great, and I love the cast and the season. We've got some super exciting guest stars, like Kim Kardashian was on our first episode, and she's going to be on a bunch. So she's definitely, like, sort of like a cheerleader type, too, I think. She would be good on our cheerleading team, I think.
Okay.
And also Joan Rivers came on, and Patty Duke, and Serena Williams, and so we had an exciting, exciting season.
Oh, cool. That sounds like it was a lot of fun. Out of all
it's
of those
so
people
fun.
You just mentioned, who was the most fun?
I think my favorite is Patty Duke, just because she's such a legend, and I love her just, like, since the Patty Duke show, and also from Valley of the Dolls and The Miracle Worker, and she's just such an amazing person. She's an author, and she's a mother, and she's just She's fabulous. And so we've had really great guest stars. So we just have such great luck. I think we write good parts for women. And so a lot of women want to come on and be on the show with us.
Now, about Kim Kardashian, like, what does she really look like in person?
I mean, you know, I never got to see her in person because she is so famous. Like, I couldn't even get on set, and I'm on the show. Like,
oh, no.
I didn't have any scenes with her, so I didn't get to go on. There had to be, like, huge, like, barricades, like, in front because people, like, are so into her, and, you know, she's just such an amazing star that, like, people, like, go crazy, so... Sometimes we have, like, paparazzi kind of hang around, but this was, like, really crazy. So I couldn't even get on, so I didn't get to meet her. So but she's coming back. She's going to do more episodes of the show. She's sort of a regular. So hopefully I'll get to meet her then.
Yeah, well, when she comes back, you have to get a photo with her.
I have to. I will.
No.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think you need to write that into your contract.
I know. I'm going to, like, really make a demand that I have to. Well, I really wanted to be on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, too, but that didn't pan out. But I was, like, so excited that I could have possibly gone on a date with her. So maybe someday.
Oh, yeah. That would be fun. Absolutely.
I hope so.
Well, now, you weren't Dancing with the Stars. What was that like?
Yeah. Well, it was really hard. But I'm hoping that I could do the All-Stars because they're, like, having a new season. Their next season is going to be people who were on the show before. And I feel like, you know, I only went on for, like, 3 weeks, and I really want to do it again. I think that I could do a better job, and I wouldn't be as nervous because I've done it before. It was really probably the scariest thing I've ever done because I'm just, like, really scared about, like, dancing in front of people. But, I mean, you guys aren't scared, I guess. You dance in front of people all the time, right?
Oh, we're scared.
Is it scary? I was so scared.
It's scary.
I just was scared. Yeah, I was scared that I was going to fall, and I was scared, like, for so many different reasons. But, you know, I really want another chance at it, and plus it's really good money.
Well, while you were there, what was your favorite dance?
I think I like the jive because it's, like, the most, I think it's the most difficult, but it's so precise. And there's something, like, I don't know, mathematic about it. So I kind of got into that because, you know, I'm Asian. So I was into it. But, like, it's a really athletic dance, and so I thought it just made me feel really good.
Well, I mean, I remember seeing you, and you looked amazing. I don't know why you were only there for a short time. You should have been there longer.
Well, thank you. Well, maybe I'll do the All-Stars, and you can vote for me.
Okay.
Who's your partner? Who's your partner on Dancing with the Stars?
Huh?
Who was your partner on Dancing with the Stars?
My partner was Louis Van Amstel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mhm.
Yeah. So he taught me a lot. You know, I mean, I think that world of ballroom dance is so amazing. All those dancers, everybody on that show is great, and so I really love hanging out with them. So I really want to go back.
I hope you get a chance to go back. I wanted to ask you about something. I saw something where you portrayed Kim Jong-il on 30 Rock. I mean,
yes.
You were amazing. How did you do that?
Well, it's crazy because I actually look like him, which is really depressing but really true. And we have the same face, too. Well, I have, like, a bald cap, and then they put, like, the Kim Jong-il wig on me, and it's really, it's an accent that I know well. It's just very Korean. So, and I am Korean. I'm actually from North Korea. My family is from there. So it's part of my heritage. So it actually really does make sense.
That is the problem, though, with playing real people. If something happens to them, then chances are you won't get to play that part a whole lot longer. Although I guess they could have ghost or dream sequences with Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, but I mean, he's already dead, and I played him again. So in that world, he's still alive for some reason. So, and I'm also playing the son, and he's pretty alive. So I think I'm okay. Hopefully, that gives me a little bit of job security.
Excellent. If I could, Margaret, you mentioned the North Korean connection there. I wanted to mention it was a delight to see you pop up on one of my favorite shows, which is Finding Your Roots. That's always a fascinating show. It's a show that Henry Louis Gates does, exploring the family trees and the unknown parts of backgrounds of various people of renown in entertainment and in politics and so forth. And, you know you're going to find some unexpected things regardless of how well you know your past when you're on there. And, you know, like Dancing with the Stars, that's got to be one of these amazing experiences that a certain amount of celebrity affords you. What was it like to have that opportunity?
Oh, it was really incredible. It was, like, such a great honor to meet Henry, like, you know, just to be around him. You know, he's just such an icon to me, and, you know, I love him. But what was weird was, like, you know, to get your DNA, what you have to do is you have to salivate into a cup, and I had to fill a whole cup full of my own saliva, and I'm, like, usually, like, kind of a dry mouth person anyway, but it was really hard. Like, I couldn't eat anything for half an hour before, and that was nearly impossible for me because I eat every 5 minutes. So, but it was really, it was intense to have all of that kind of knowledge in your DNA. They know all that stuff about you from what your saliva looks like under a microscope.
And then, you know, I mean, they present it very dramatically. You sit there with a book and you turn one page at a time to reveal another chapter from your past as Gates sort of, you know, presides over it. It looks very dramatic. Is it, you know, what is it actually like to have it literally uncovered for you?
Well, it's very dramatic, and they keep it all secret from you before, you know, so you don't know anything until he actually shows you. And what is really nice is he's such a loving man, and he's so brilliant. And I just felt like, you know, I was given this great gift of knowledge about where I'm from and who I am, and I love that.
That's terrific. And of course, you know, you're used to letting people know about your past. You know, you don't shy, certainly in your stand-up act, you don't shy away from your family tree and your family connections. In fact, your new show, it's called Mother,
mm-hmm.
and I'm guessing it has something to do with your family.
Yes, and it's
all about I'm just using my keen, you know, Hollywood instincts there. But.
Well, it's, you know, she always tells me, you're the only reason why I'm here. You know, she's like all into, like, the fact that I was born, and I'm like her favorite thing that ever happened. So I'm doing something about her. For her.
So what are we going to hear? I mean, you know, as I said, throughout your career, you've you know, your family and the clash between immigrants and you know, the children of immigrants who are born here, that's, you know, that's been a staple of a lot of your act, and it, you know, it's resonated so well because so many people can identify with that.
I think we're all immigrants. You know, we're all immigrants, actually, because, you know, we all came here from somewhere else, really, everybody.
Absolutely. But that first generation to be born here, the first generation to see things in such a different way than their parents, you know,
right.
Certainly. And especially, I mean, you know, where you grew up and you know, the different take on things, the language barrier, if it's there, it's certainly fertile ground for comedy.
I think so, and I think just being, you know, I just kind of being in that environment and also kind of like being a comedian, you know, that's truly, like, really original for anybody in my family. They didn't really understand what I was doing, and they didn't really know if it was okay. They'd never seen Asian people doing that, and so it's a huge, big deal for them. So some that I did a show that was really about them and about my experience.
Did it take a lot for them to sort of accept that this was all right, that this meant that you were successful? Have they figured that out?
I think that they love it. You know, they're really excited and they're really proud. I think that they just don't know how to deal with it. They're like, kind of, how do we process this? Because we've never seen it happen before. So I think it's really beautiful. They're really proud.
That's excellent. I should throw it back to the ladies. I'm hogging all the time here because I'm such a big fan. But Lisa, Betty Ann,
okay.
I'm dominating.
Well,
sorry.
I wanted to ask you, because I've seen lots of photos of you, Margaret, and there are some really beautiful photos of you, and
you have
tattoos. I mean, you're gorgeous, and you have these beautiful tattoos.
Thank you.
How many tattoos do you have?
I have quite a lot. You know, I think almost 80% of my body is tattooed. The only parts that aren't really are my forearms and my neck and my face. And My legs are completely tattooed. My stomach and back are completely covered. My arms to my elbows. I really have them everywhere, and but you can't really see them because I usually kind of keep them covered up in general when I'm working as an actor anyway. So you don't see them right away, but all the parts I play are pretty conservative. But, yeah, I love it. I love tattooing.
I mean, they're beautiful. They look like art.
Thank you.
You know, I've seen, you know, tattoos on people where it looks like, you know, somebody just drew with a pen, or they're just not beautiful art. And your tattoos are beautiful art. I mean,
Thank you.
They're just gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
How painful was that?
It's so painful. You know, and I think it's getting worse. As I get older, I think it's harder to take. The pain is just like, you know, it's so intense. And, you know, they're breaking your skin and they're putting ink in there. And I don't know. I feel like I get sensitive much more so as I get older. It's hard.
When did you decide to have your first tattoo?
Well, I've always wanted them. I grew up around people who were very tattooed, and the people who raised me, you know, that worked for my family and basically were really instrumental in my becoming a lady. They were all really heavily tattooed, and when I decided I was in my 30s, I decided to go with them, and I knew that I was going to be tattooed like them. And, you know, my tattooing is really a symbol of people that I grew up with and I love and I need, you know, all around me, and so that's really for them. It's really about my family.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't have any tattoos, but yours are beautiful. And
Thank you.
I wanted to let you know that because I really was impressed. Your photos are like, they're art. They're work
Thank
of art.
You.
So you're gorgeous.
So nice.
You really are. And I'm so excited to talk to you.
Oh.
Lisa and I, we're silly cheerleaders, so you're going to have to bear with us because...
Well, that's awesome. I love it. I want to be one.
We have a lot of enthusiasm.
That's great.
Now, I was looking through all of your different information, all the things that you've done, and I noticed that you worked with John Travolta. What was that like?
Yeah. That was great. He's great. I did a movie with him years ago, directed by John Woo, with him and Nicolas Cage. It was called Face Off. And it's actually quite a classic. But I worked on that movie for, a year. And it's a big action film. And, you know, for those big action films, you have a stunt double. Basically, your sort of like doppelganger, who is you, they have like the most amazing physical beauty and like attributes. Like mine was like such an amazing martial artist, and so you have like yourself, and then you have the like crazy, like perfect athletic stuntman version of you. So it was really surreal, but I had a great time.
Oh, that's cool. I remember watching that movie. That was a great movie. Really
that's
enjoyed it.
That's a great
it.
Movie, yeah. That's a good one.
Really good. Now, you also worked with Jerry Seinfeld in the early years. What was that like?
Oh, he helped me a lot. You know, he really encouraged me in the beginning, and he gave me my start. You know, I opened for him when I was just a kid, and he was like, you're great. You have a really unique voice, and you're going to go really far. And he kept tabs on me through the years and sends me letters, actually like on Jerry Seinfeld's stationery, and it's really beautiful, and he's just really proud, and I'm so grateful to him. You know, he really helped me a lot, and I just, you know, I owe so much to him and his legacy, and he's a great comic.
I mean, his shows are still on today. I remember every single one, and you know, and you know what's funny? Like, a lot of times you'll be in a situation in your own life, and then it will mimic something that happened in one of his shows. And
I know,
like,
it's so funny.
It's so funny.
He's so brilliant.
Yeah,
no,
really brilliant.
I love him. Yeah, I really love him.
Now, you also appeared in one of my favorite shows, which is still on today, Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah, I love that show. Yeah, that was really fun. Well, I was so honored to be on that, and I'm friends with Michael Patrick King, and I got to meet all the wonderful ladies. You know, I love that show, and I just really was so proud to be on it. I'm good friends with some of the writers there, and I, long time ago, was asked to be one of the writers on it, but I was, like, too busy doing stand-up, and so I never ended up doing it, and I always regret that I should have gone back and done that, but it was a great show, and I was really proud to be on it.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Now, you're also an author, and you've written some books. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I love that. I've written two books, but right now my focus is blogging, so I'm a blogger, and I blog almost every day on margaretcho.com, and that's where I feel like my writerly side is really content, and you know, someday I'll publish that, I guess, but, you know, it's good enough that it's out there and it's online, and I feel like it's really good writing, and, you know, I really enjoy that part of my life. That's something that I love to do.
Oh, okay. Well, David, do you have anything else you would like to ask Margaret?
Oh, how much time do I have?
I know. We're running out of time, and we love you. We love you. You're fun and cool.
You're so adorable. So your voice is so cute.
Thank you.
Now just promise us, if you get a chance, you'll come back sometime. We can chat some more with you.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. Absolutely.
And Margaret, remember, you're going to be an honorary member of our NFL alumni cheerleading group anytime, and you can come dance with us.
Thank you. Thank you so
much.
We'll
get you a uniform.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's perfect.
We'll send you some pom-poms.
I love it.
Thanks so much, Margaret, for coming on the show tonight. We really enjoyed speaking with you, and we would love to have you back again.
Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye. Thanks,
Margaret.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was majorly cool.
How cute is she?
It really was.
She's so cute. I love her. She is so sweet.
And it's odd because, it's not odd, it's just different because, you know, she's very sweet when you talk to her. And then you catch her stand-up act. And, you know, she is a force of nature. She overwhelms you with the humor and the power of what she's saying. I've never seen an audience not dissolve into laughter when she was up there.
Mm-hmm.
She's just great.
Yeah, she's great. She's fabulous. So, Davis, tell us some more Hollywood scoops.
Well, if you know, a little bit of time before the top of the hour, we cannot wrap this hour without talking about Miley Cyrus.
We have to hear about that one.
it looks lovely. You know, it came out this week that she is engaged to Liam Hemsworth, who she's been sort of on and off with, mostly on ever since they made a movie called The Last Song a couple of years ago. Most people know Liam. He's Chris's younger brother. This isn't the Hemsworth who's Thor. That's his brother Chris. Liam is the one in The Hunger Games. He's the one who plays Gale in The Hunger Games. And the two of them were in this movie a couple of years ago. They've been dating most of the time ever since. And now Miley's sporting a big old rock, and they're engaged. Which, you know, I wish them both well. You know, Miley's had a few ups and downs the last couple of years, and maybe she's decided to try to settle down, but she's 19 years old. Think about that. She's engaged to be married at 19. Now, 19 in Hollywood is not necessarily the same as 19 somewhere else. She's had a lot more growing up fast to do, a lot more dealing with things that some people don't deal with when they're teenagers. But let's just look at the record here, okay? Getting married that young when you're in the public eye is not necessarily going to get you great results. Leanne Rimes, she was 19. She married Dean Charamet, and that fell apart when she fell for her co-star in a movie. Ring any bells? Miley? Liam? You know, that's dangerous ground there. Drew Barrymore, people don't remember this. She got married when she was 19, and it lasted about a month, I think. Kate Hudson was 21 when she and Chris Robinson of the Black Crowes got hitched.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't last. And both of the Simpson girls, you can ask them about getting married young. Ashley was 24 when she married Pete Wentz, and she was 27 when they got divorced. Yeah. And, of course, Jessica Simpson was 22 when she married Nick Lachey, And we all know how that turned out. We got to watch how that turned out, on a reality show. So, you know, Married Too Young is one Hollywood franchise that doesn't need another sequel. So I really hope that all goes well there and they do make it. But you look at the track record of young Hollywood stars who tie the knot, and it's not the most encouraging thing in the world. What do you ladies think?
It doesn't sound good to me. I was surprised when I heard it. I was like, no, that can't be. But it's true. I don't understand it, really. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's too young, and to be that famous.
People romanticize marriage, you know. They think, oh, I'm going to be a bride, wear the white dress, and I'm going to live happily ever after. They have no idea. It's paying bills and kids and issues, and, you know, they just think it's love and romance.
Well,
yeah.
and as I said, I'm a little hesitant to put myself in anyone else's shoes, especially someone who lives, you know, such a markedly different life than most people. A lot of things are probably different, but just looking at the way it's gone for other people in her situation, in roughly her situation, it's not terribly encouraging. But, you know, we look on the bright side, we wish him well. As much glee as people might think that entertainment journalists take from lamenting, from covering bad things that happen to celebrities to, you know, well, I won't say all of us because there are some bad apples in every bunch, but most of us truly, we would much rather cover good news. We would much rather cover the successes of people and their triumphs and their mitzvahs than report on things that we'd really rather not. You know, celebrity breakups, celebrity deaths, celebrities getting arrested, it's not good stuff to put out into the world, and people want to know that stuff about their favorite celebrities. It's legitimate news when things happen, good or bad, to public figures. But you know, if I could just report the good stuff, hey, I'd be a much happier person.
I agree, but I still like reading all your tweets. You're really good.
I appreciate that. This is where I connected with Artists First and with the Chit Chat Radio Cafe, and I do my best to keep my very, very slowly growing circle of followers apprised on what's happening and, you know, why it's happening and what they should know and care about at CNN LA David on Twitter. And I find it a lot of fun. I've made some great friends, some people who have really added to my life, not least of which, you know, the ladies of Chit Chat Cafe.
Oh, thank you. And with that,
thank
we have
David.
To wrap. It's
10
o'clock already.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
We have to come on again. We're going to have you on more often. Now that we're getting our act together and we're regrouping our show,
I'd love to be a part of that act anytime at all. I still haven't told you my legendary Hollywood Walk of Fame story, so we'll save that for next time.
We're going to save that for next time. We'll have you on in a couple of weeks. We'll be in touch.
All right.
Have a nice
weekend. Thanks, ladies. Always a pleasure.
And good night,
David.
Everyone. Good night, Betty Ann. It's been a fun show.
Good night, Lisa.
Good night, everybody.
Great time.
Yep.
Night.
Kisses. Mwah. See you next week.